So fetal heart rate monitoring is the process of monitoring the baby's heart rate throughout pregnancy. It's done as a special type of screening test. It's done both antenatally and during labour. And we use a machine called a cardiotocograph, so a CTG machine.
And how does fetal heart rate monitoring, how does that differ from, say, using a Doppler?
It differs because the machine, the CTG machine, produces a graph paper that allows you to look at how the baby's heart rate responds to contractions or to maternal movement or fetal movement. So you look at a response of the baby's heart rate to some kind of stimulus.
Rather than the Doppler, which just
The Doppler just gives you a rate.
Right.
So you can only hear a rate. The CTG plots the baby's heart rate on a graph that allows you to look and see. It measures variability in the baseline, so how much it changes over the minute-to-minute changes. And it also measures whether it accelerates with a baby's movement or whether it decelerates with a contraction.
So in labour, do you use it on all women or just some women?
It's used specifically on women with complex pregnancies, so when there are risk factors. That I guess the aim of using a CTG is to support women with complex pregnancies to achieve a normal birth. So if we detect something that's happened during labour that might influence the baby's well-being or the fetal well-being in utero, then we use the CTG to try and get an idea of how the baby is.
Do you use it antenatally at all?
We use it antenatally for those women with complex pregnancies where there might be a change in the maternal condition that will affect the in utero environment. We'll use a CTG as some way of trying to identify if the baby's still well or whether there's a change in the baby's condition. It's kind of a test that you do waiting for an ultrasound to happen.
What does it look like on the woman? How does it work?
It's got there are two transducers. There's one that
What's a transducer?
It's kind of a round disc that's strapped onto the woman, or nowadays they can be taped on, and it sits at the top of her uterus on what we call the fundus, and that measures the uterine pressure. And then there's another toco, a kind of round flat disc that sits over the baby's heart in the uterus. So we kind of put it over the baby's anterior shoulder to be able to measure the baby's heart rate. And that's like the Doppler. It measures an ultrasound wave of the fetal heart.
So it's non-invasive?
It's non-invasive, no. The women have to lie in the same position for a while, which is a bit, just uncomfortable being in the same position, but that's about all.
Are clinicians well trained in using the CTG machine?
In actual application of it, yes. Interpreting the pattern takes a bit of skill, really, and over the years there have been multiple different guidelines about how you interpret. We still haven't got it right, and every 10 years somebody releases another guideline and changes the language that we use around how you review the actual fetal heart rate pattern, so they keep changing the language. So our communication around the fetal heart rate features, the features of the pattern, have varied over the years, so people get a bit confused.
So that's interpreting the graph that comes out of the CTG.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that a case of new research is coming through that changes it?
I'm not sure why it changes all the time, but it seems to. It seems like somebody thinks that this is a better definition, particularly around the way the baby's heart rate responds during labour. So normally after a contraction or during a contraction, the baby's heart rate will decelerate.
So go down.
And that's a normal kind of response because there's a change in the oxygen flow through to the placenta while the contraction's happening. So the baby's heart responds in a normal sort of way to that happening. But they have different names as to what they think affects that oxygen supply and blood flow through to the placenta. So they could be called late decelerations because they happen at the end of the contraction, or early because they happen at the beginning of the contraction, or they can be called variables because they happen at different times and probably due to cord occlusion rather than the uterine blood flow. So they have different names, and there could be a combination of what's cord and what's uterus that's causing the deceleration. So then they give that a different name, and so it gets a bit confusing for clinicians.
Is that confusing because if you go from one hospital, one maternity unit to another, it's different?
It's confusing across countries, I think. Like, there have been American guidelines, there have been English guidelines. Australia now has its own set of guidelines. Everybody uses a different terminology for what's described as a very similar type of deceleration. And so people use mixed terms. Part of my research was to look at the different language that we use around fetal heart rate monitoring. And for one deceleration, I found 33 different terminologies used for the same deceleration, which just shows the confusion that's out there. And part of our education and my research was to try and get people speaking the same language so that we improved our communication with each other.
Is it midwives or is it obstetricians who are using?
Both of us, yeah. Okay. So the midwives will do it on an order for the obstetrician or where they think there's a change in the woman's condition. As I said, it's a screening test. So all it does is give us some idea that the baby's probably not coping so well in its environment and leads us to do another test. So midwives use it. They provide the obstetricians with some kind of description of what it looks like if they're not there to see it. So the terminology is important because it's our communication tool to each other.
So you're saying that obstetricians and midwives don't feel confident in teaching CTG?
Not many of them. As I said, it's complex to interpret a fetal heart rate pattern. It's only got the interpretation is only right at about 45% of the time. So there are fetal heart rate patterns that don't look good, like they're non-reassuring. But when you do a true test of fetal welfare, like a blood pH sample, so you take blood from the baby's scalp and test it and you get a pH level or a lactate level, that's quite commonly normal. So it's only actually accurate about 45% of the time in being able to define true fetal welfare. So or fetal well-being.
Accurate 45% of the time, is that because we're misinterpreting it or is it just
No, it's just one of those
test.
Tools. It's an inaccurate test. It's a bit like screening for breast cancer. You know, you find many breast lumps that actually aren't cancer. It's the same deal. You find many abnormal fetal heart rate patterns that actually aren't truly fetal distress or where the baby is unwell. So it just is a screening test to tell us that we need to do another test, which is why it's so inaccurate.
Midwives and obstetricians aren't comfortable teaching it or they aren't comfortable,
teaching it. They aren't comfortable teaching it more than doing it. They do it all the time and they interpret it. But they have, before we did the education, they weren't sure if they were escalating to, if the midwives were escalating to an obstetrician, they weren't actually sure that they were using the right language. So they a bit, you know, hummed and hawed around it and were a bit, oh, well, it's just not right. Whereas now they can go, I want you to come and see Mrs. Jones. She's got a pathological fetal heart rate pattern. And that's enough to get somebody to come and to check it properly.
So tell me, Helen, a little bit about this research that you did. It was called, you developed a program called FONT. What was that?
So FONT was an education program developed by New South Wales Health to try and teach our clinicians about fetal heart rate monitoring and about the management of maternity emergencies.
So you got a whole bunch of clinicians in the room and started getting them all speaking the same
so
language.
So we trained about 240 trainers across the state, which about 30 in each of what were then our area health services. So we did this education about 8 years ago. And we trained 30 clinicians from each of the local health or area health services to be trainers for FONT. And we developed up an education package that was the same for the whole of the state. So everybody was learning exactly the same material, but it was being delivered by a range of practitioners across the state. So midwives, general practitioners and obstetricians were all the teachers, and they were also the people sitting in the room learning. There's a lot of group work and discussion that we created hoping to improve teamwork and communication.
How did you decide, you mentioned the deceleration, there's 33 different terms. How do you decide which is the right term to run with?
Oh, we used a guideline. In New South Wales, we were using the English guidelines, so the guidelines that were developed by the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynaecologists. And we used their guidelines as the base. So the clinicians of New South Wales decided that was the guideline they wanted to use, and we used those definitions as the base for the education.
You said this was 8 years ago. Do we know if this training has had an impact to improve that communication?
Well, certainly my research showed that our clinicians learnt a lot, so we know that they changed to be using the one terminology. We had an improvement of something like 95% in using the right terminology to describe the fetal heart rate pattern. So the aim of that was to ensure that we're all understood what was being said if somebody used the right terminology. So we definitely showed an improvement in people's knowledge around fetal heart rate pattern interpretation. We showed some difference with clinical outcomes, but it's hard to associate that with the actual education. As a statewide program, you know, there are 100,000 births a year across New South Wales. It was very hard to measure whether we directly had improved clinical outcomes. I have been able to show a change in outcomes across the state, but being able to directly link them to the education has been difficult.
Are you saying that the poor communication and the poor interpretation of CTG meant that babies were dying or being injured?
Yes. There were certainly a number of adverse events that we were able to describe before we did the education. When I looked at trying to show clinical outcomes, I looked at a database that we use in our neonatal intensive care units, and I looked at a group of term babies that were born spontaneously, so nobody had they hadn't had a cesarean section, so they were born vaginally, where there was an outcome, an admission outcome into the nursery of fetal distress, which is what we find with the fetal heart rate patterns. It's kind of the descriptor. And I looked at those babies before we did the education program, and across the state there were 34 babies that died over a period of 4 years. So there's not a lot of babies that die. But what we showed after the education is we only had 24 dead babies in that subgroup. So it was only a change of 10 babies, and across 100,000 births it doesn't mean much. But I'm sure it means a lot to those 10 women who are holding their babies today. And it certainly is a reduction of 30% in the number of babies that died. But statistically, I can't prove that we made a difference.